As of March, the Wisconsin National Guard has a new leader, Major General Paul Knapp. He graduated from the Air Force Academy in 1992 and has been serving ever since. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent, and our next guest began her work in April as the Sexual Assault Response Coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard, without any military background at all, but rather a career of advocating for victims. The State Department of Justice is still reviewing sexual assault investigations from our National Guard following a federal report that found they were mishandled. I'd like to hear from National Guard members past, present, perhaps future this morning to hear what they have to say. Phone numbers for you at 1-800-642-1234. If you don't want to say it, you can type it, send it, email ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is the new State Sexual Assault Response Coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard, Tierney Twing. Welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
And you've been at your job since May. So tell us a little bit about your duties and what your role is in the Wisconsin National Guard today.
Sure. So, you know, since starting, my role has really been to learn the organization. Like you said, I come in with advocacy experience and working within the community within Wisconsin. So really learning what the National Guard needs, trying to figure out, okay, what policies do we have right now that we need to maybe make them a little bit more victim-centered, or how can we make sure that each victim's voice is heard throughout our process? With that, I work with the victim advocates that we have within the National Guard to do a great job to support victims and get through whatever process they're trying to get through to heal from that journey. Everything looks different, so it's really making sure that we have all of the resources readily available to any victims that come forward and survivors that need support.
So you haven't served in any military experience before. So tell us a little bit about your background, Tierney, and where you're coming from.
Sure. So I started off working for the Department of Corrections. I worked within the unit of the Prison Rape Elimination Act. So really got to see sexual assaults on that end, working within survivors who are in the prison system. Obviously, that looks very different than survivors who may be outside of the prison system. So really got to learn what survivors need in that aspect. And then started working with the domestic abuse shelter. So again, saw it from a different point of view. Sexual assault can look in many different ways and have many different survivors who need different resources. So that was a really big eye-opener to see, you know, this is a huge problem, and it's something that really needs to be focused on from all avenues. And then most recently was working with the Rape Crisis Center in Dane County, and really got to work with survivors within Dane County, as well as learn the resources. There are tons of resources out there for survivors, and really got to work with some great people to figure out, how do we support people? How do we get them the assistance they need and help them through processes that are really complicated and can be really, really hard to get through?
Tierney Twing is the State Sexual Assault Response Coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard, been the position since May, and considering your background, Tierney, what do you see as the biggest issues facing the Guard when it comes to sexual assault?
Yeah, well, I think it's something that's not, you know, just at the National Guard. It's a cultural change, and it's something that we're seeing throughout the whole world, the whole country, is we're trying to change how do we interact with survivors, how do we talk about consent at a baseline, if we're asking the world to make sure we get consent when working with people, that we want to know what is consent? How do you get it? So really starting at that baseline and making sure that everyone's aware of what consent is, what sexual assault means. And then a big thing that we're really trying to focus on is everything we do needs to be done with a victim-centered. We want to make sure that survivors' voices are heard, because they're the sole experts in their situation. We can come in with all the resources, but it's the survivor who knows exactly what they need at that moment. So we want to make sure we're listening. What do they need?
Inside the Wisconsin National Guard, Tierney, as a sexual assault response coordinator, who do you answer to?
So currently I answer to General Knapp. And we work with together, and we work with a group of leaders who try to figure out what can we do next. But I really like to work close with him, and he's been great. Everyone that I've worked with so far has been really invested and really trying to make changes that benefit survivors.
would be interested in hearing from any National Guard members this morning about what they think about what's transpired inside the Wisconsin National Guard, the federal investigation, and how the Guard handles sexual assault cases. Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. You walked in with a federal investigation being announced, with the Department of Justice investigating. How does that impact your daily duties and your responsibilities to being a victim advocate, Tierney?
Yeah, it impacts everything we do. Thankfully, OCI came in and they gave us, hey, these are some things that we see that you're missing or things that need to be altered or added to.
OCI?
The Office of Complex Investigations.
Thank you.
And they really just gave us, this is what we're missing, this is what needs to be added to. So everything we do, we like to look back at that and say, hey, are we still falling in line with what we're supposed to be doing? Are we still really listening to what we've been told and what's been investigated with us? So I think it's really helpful because it keeps us on the path that we're trying to go for victim-centered and making sure we're doing the right thing for victims.
So you've been in the correction system, the Dane County Rape Crisis Center. Tell me a little bit about the National Guard in Wisconsin and the culture there and what you've walked into, what you've experienced.
Yeah, I think, survivors from all aspects have one thing in common, and that's that they want to be heard. Obviously, it looks different. Sexual assault does not look the same in every situation. So one thing that we want to continue, and that remains the same no matter where I've worked, is that survivors know what they need. With the National Guard, it's really making sure we want to get you to a point where you can do your job. That's what's important. We want to make sure that you're healthy, making sure that you are getting to the point where you can come to work, you can spend time with your family, and you're not being taken over by the situation that you went through. And that looks different, like I said, for everyone, but really making sure that they're at a safe place and a healthy place in order to get the most out of their life that they're looking for.
Do you know what you were walking into when you took this position? Did you know about the federal investigation, the Department of Justice, and the Office of Complex Investigations?
I did. I obviously knew what anyone else in the civilian world knew. So I knew what was in the news, what came out from the National Guard. But I did have an idea of what was going on. And I think it created a great opportunity for us to make changes and for us to really take a hard look at ourselves.
So you saw this as a victim-centered advocate and said that there is an opportunity here to support victims that perhaps has been, it's an opportunity for you to do what you do best.
Definitely. And I think I'd like to also take a moment to recognize the survivors that came forward, because it's so hard to do. It's really hard to step forward and say, this is the way I wanted to be treated, and I don't believe I was treated that way. And so it takes a lot of strength for them to do that. And so I really want to say, okay, we're listening, we hear what you're saying, and we're going to make changes to make sure that that happens. So yeah, I definitely saw it as an opportunity, and it shines light on us. So it gives us a chance to use the resources that maybe weren't there before.
Have you considered the possibility that you would come up against something where you wouldn't be able to be an advocate for a survivor, where what steps you would take if perhaps at some point you were started finding roadblocks in your work?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's definitely roadblocks no matter what we do. But the nice thing is that if a survivor comes forward and for whatever circumstances, we can't give them the services that they need, we really are trying to also involve ourselves in the community. Because like I said before, there are resources all over Wisconsin. And if we can't give those resources, we want to make sure that there is someone who can. So we'll work with survivors, no matter if they want to stick with us as victim advocates or not, to get them whatever resources they need.
That's Tierney Twing, and she is the new state sexual assault response coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard, which is facing an investigation through the Department of Justice in Wisconsin because of their previous handlings of sexual assault investigations, and that came out as a result of a federal investigation in itself. So, National Guard members, 1-800-642-1234. We'll hear from you after the break and continue with our conversation with Tierney Twing. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Our guest is the new Sexual Assault Response Coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to the Ideas Show on the morning show on the Ideas Network. I got that backwards. Tierney Twing is answering your questions at 1-800-642-1234. She's been in the position since May. She doesn't have any military experience, but her experience is in victim advocacy and supporting survivors of sexual assault. And Tierney, you've talked a couple times now about in your work, you see this pervasive in the culture at large. It's not just in the National Guard. It's not just in the Department of Corrections. So if we were to begin tackling this as a culture with your experience, where would you think we would even begin?
Yeah, I think that's a tough question because it's throughout everything we do. A lot of what we're seeing right now is starting at the schools, starting with those conversations about how do you talk about consent? It's stuff that I know when I was in school, we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about sexual assault. We didn't talk about consent. So it's really starting there and making sure everyone has a baseline and we know exactly what to do when trying to achieve consent or when trying to really have those conversations because they can be difficult to talk about.
So part of it is actually talking about sexuality because you can't talk about with consent without talking about sexuality. And to some degree, that still could be uncomfortable, verboten. But you would say that that is at the core of what is needed?
It definitely is. And it's like you said, it's sometimes a conversation no matter what age you are.
Well, it's about, you know, your body and your rights and your comfort and focusing on that. But it's also how others interact with you. You know, then it comes to the Wisconsin National Guard and then it becomes your daily work. And what's your work like on a daily basis there, Tierney?
Yeah, so it really depends on the day. One thing that I really like doing is now we make sure we have training. So our leadership has mandatory training. So we talk about exactly that. What is consent? But then we also talk about trauma-informed care. So when a survivor comes forward, what can that look like and how can we support them through it? Because coming forward is really difficult. So we want to make sure that when a survivor comes forward, we are as trauma-informed and supportive and we listen and make sure that they feel heard and that we can get them the resources they need while still respecting exactly what they're looking for. So that's another thing that we're training all the time to make sure that all of our soldiers and airmen, service members really know how to survive, to support a survivor.
And how has the rank and file treated you?
Everyone's been great. Everyone's been very welcoming. Like I said, unfortunately, when things come to light, it had some more eyes on us. But what that's done is made sure that people who maybe didn't know that I existed or didn't know that the program existed, now they're aware of it. And people have come forward from all avenues to support us and ask, what can I do? I want to support. I want to make sure the service members get what they need. What can I do? And that's been great. It just gives us all the resources that maybe we didn't have before.
Now, this federal investigation came out before your time in the Wisconsin National Guard, but one of the major findings was that the Guard failed to notify federal authorities of sexual misconduct when they were required to do so, and instead looked into allegations internally and kept it inside the Guard. I'm curious how you're going to change this history of not reporting sexual misconduct to outside authorities. Is there a procedure in place already?
Yes. So every sexual assault that we have, that's an unrestricted report, we report to local law enforcement and then we do not do any internal investigation with the sexual assault. It all goes to the Office of Complex Investigations to really make sure that there's that bias taken out. We want it to be an outside agency to be able to have a fresh look at it and make sure that our survivors are getting what they need and that there isn't that no internal miscommunication or internal bias that happens. So we definitely make sure that every single case gets that out to external eye.
So give us a little better of an idea. Help us understand this process or how it's supposed to work. At what point are authorities inside the Guard notified of an allegation? And who exactly are those authorities?
Sure. So if a survivor comes forward and says, you know, I was sexually assaulted, I'd like to report it. Then we work with them to see, okay, who's the local law enforcement? We set it up with the survivor so that they are comfortable with the little things, the location, how they contact law enforcement, where they do the reporting, who they have there. All those things make that reporting so much more victim-centered. And then from that point, the local law enforcement will take the investigation. Office of Complex Investigations, they wait until local law enforcement has a chance to investigate, and then they will look at it. So it's really sent throughout the whole process. But as soon as the survivor comes forward and says that they'd like to report, we immediately go to set up steps with them and safety plan and make sure that they're aware of every step of the process as soon as they're ready.
Paul Knapp, General Knapp, the new head of the Wisconsin National Guard. You work with him and you report to him. And what's his reaction been to how you have hit the ground running there?
I think it's been a really great team effort. Like you said, I came in with no military experience. So I came in knowing my piece, knowing the advocacy, working within the different systems throughout Wisconsin and throughout the processes. And then they came in with a great knowledge of what's happened in the past, but also what our soldiers are looking for, what our airmen, what our service members are looking for. And I think that's been a huge piece that we have kind of worked together on, and all the leadership to make sure that we're getting the job done right.
So do you have enough time in the day? And if not, are there things that you would like to see done and expanded that inside the National Guard that would help with the culture there?
You know, I think I would definitely never have enough time in the day. we could work on it 24 hours a day and still not be done. But I think it's a slow change. Cultural changes don't happen overnight. And so being able to keep that in the forefront of our mind that everything we do is going to make a difference. It's not just me that's making the change. It needs to be every single service member having daily diligence, making sure that if they see something or hear something that they know isn't right or feel isn't right, that they come forward. They call our services and say, hey, this is what I hear. This is what I saw. What can we do? And then we'll plan with them. It's an everyday thing, and I definitely can't do it alone. So it's a big job.
Our guest is Tierney Twing, and she's the Sexual Assault Response Coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard as of May. At the end of last year, the federal investigation was released that led to the State Department of Justice investigating the sexual assault cases inside the Wisconsin National Guard, all before Tierney Twing's time. But, you know, the investigation found the Guard showed little concern for victims, basically. For example, there was a case where an assault victim was treated as the subject of an investigation. Victims were misled about their claims being handled by organizations outside the Guard. If you saw this happening today in your role, what would you do?
Well, it's definitely not something that would ever be okay in my book. Currently, we meet monthly to talk about cases that are ongoing, to make sure exactly where each case is, have that oversight, and make sure we're not missing steps, and that survivors are getting every resource they need. So at that meeting, if we're made aware of something that's not being done correctly or that we missed a step, we take that step back and make sure that we do it right. Having that oversight and just being able to talk through cases is really important to make sure that everything is centered around the survivor and what services they're receiving.
Tierney, what do you say to a sexual assault survivor who has made the decision to come forward?
First, I'm so glad they did. That's a tough thing to do, and it's not something that's right for everyone. So I'd really first like to say thank you so much for coming forward. And then it's time for me to be quiet and listen to what they're looking for and what their concerns are. Because when people come forward, they usually have concerns. How is this going to go? Most people don't know the process because they've never been through it. So being able to listen to what their concerns are, what they want out of the process, and then we take those steps to achieve that as much as possible.
It is, as you described earlier, trauma-informed care. But could you expand on that a little bit for me, Tierney, and let us know what that means specifically when it comes to sexual assault?
Definitely. Well, it starts with the little things. Like I mentioned with the law enforcement reporting, we take the little steps. Where would you like to report it? When they initially come and talk with us, would you like the door open or closed? It's making sure that they're as comfortable as possible through a process that's really hard. It's really traumatizing to go through this process, to tell your story, tell people what happened multiple times. So trying to minimize the amount of times you tell people. When you go through the process, it'll be many times that you have to repeat yourself. And so making sure that when they're speaking, we're really listening. And if they're saying, hey, I'm overwhelmed, we take a break. We make sure that their health and their ability to continue on after this process is at the forefront of absolutely everything we do.
Your commitment to your work sounds to be in stark contrast to the results detailed by the federal investigation at the end of last year. And so this trauma-informed care, and as the sexual assault response coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard, imagine that's a lot on your shoulders. Are you able to prioritize supporting survivors with all the other responsibilities you'll have inside the Wisconsin National Guard?
Yeah, well, thankfully, we have a group of really great victim advocates who take over that victim care. Obviously, I wish I could work with every survivor that comes forward, but it's not realistic. So we make sure that we have trained, credentialed victim advocates who can do the job, who can be there to support survivors at hearings. They can be there to support them at the hospitals. They can take those calls to say, hey, I'm struggling right now. I really want to talk this through. And they really develop a great relationship with the survivor.
Tierney Twing, thank you for joining us and thank you for your work.
Thank you so much.
Tierney is the new sexual assault response coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard. Up next is news. Then we speak with Michael Bell. His son was shot and killed by a Kenosha police officer in 2004. His story. After the news, I'm Lee Rayburn. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It was a November night in 2004. Michael Bell Jr. was shot and killed by a Kenosha police officer in the driveway of his family's home. His mother and sister were witnesses, and this family's story starts to sound all too familiar. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and in case you haven't noticed, we have this amazing capacity to make lasting meaning out of just senseless tragedy. I think it's where hope comes from. 15 years of work from our next guest has already helped make some difference for the family of Jacob Blake. Michael Bell Sr. joining us this morning. And Michael, thank you for taking the time.
Lee, I'm happy to be here.
Let's start by talking about your son. Tell us about him.
Michael Bell was a 21-year-old college student who was employed. He was not a perfect angel. He had a pending DUI. And on the night of November 9th, 2004, he was coming home from a night out with friends, and he arrived at his own home, and a police officer came up behind him. Michael got out of his car, and there was some commotion, and essentially the officer made some accusations that later proved false in our civil rights trial, and the situation escalated to the point until which Michael was tased and he ran to the back of his home. At that time, his mother and sister heard the commotion upstairs, and they came downstairs and they watched Michael getting what they described as a Rodney King-style beating. And essentially, an officer at that time grabbed Michael, bent him over the hood of the car. Michael was handcuffed. Another officer screamed, "He has my gun," and a fourth officer came to the scene, put a gun directly to Michael's temple, pulled the trigger. It did not fire because the slide was disengaged, and he put it back to Michael's temple and fired a deadly shot. This occurred under a spotlight, and there were five civilian witnesses.
How many police officers?
There were initially they claimed four, but our own public records show that there are more.
More than four police officers. It sounds chaotic and is obviously tragic. Tell us about the investigation.
The investigation took place in 56 hours, two calendar days. And I found that to be very alarming. Your listeners need to know that I'm a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. I was a pilot. And I spent my whole career essentially looking at how to keep people alive by studying safety and accident investigations. And I was appalled by the quickness of the investigation.
Obviously you're in shock. There's nothing to feel because that's how you're going to cope with getting through such an amazing tragedy. But a tragedy compounded on an investigation that took place over 2 days and then cleared the officers involved. Do you remember that time for yourself, for your family, for your wife and daughter, and what that was like?
I sure do. Your listeners need to know that in that time frame, in Wisconsin, a police department conducted its own investigation on its own coworkers. And that was really alarming to me because I knew that the Inspector General in the Air Force or the NTSB didn't do that. And our own researchers showed that, you know, in 100 years we never found a police department unjustified. But it was a very tragic time, a very emotional time. I describe it as a degree of suffering that nobody will understand unless they experience it firsthand. And for a mother to have her child, and this wasn't just a police shooting, this was a police execution. When you place a gun directly to somebody's head, you look at no other outcome but death. To have that young man killed in front of his mother and sister left trauma for them that they're still experiencing today at 16 years later.
So after watching the video of Jacob Blake, Michael Bell, being shot outside his car with his kids inside the car, what was your reaction?
The shooting just occurred 27 blocks from my home. And at 5:30 or so on Sunday evening, my phone started lighting up with incoming messages, and the video was there. The first thing that I saw was the shocking shooting. And the second thing that my eyes were immediately drawn to was a young lady in leotards jumping up and down outside the door. She appeared to be either a family member or a friend, and she was screaming. And I know exactly, I can feel it in my chest right now. I know exactly what she was experiencing because our own family had went through that same thing.
So it became a trigger for you, and to some degree you had to relive this all over again.
It did, and but you have to understand that I've been doing this for 16 years, and people from all over the nation reach out to our family to ask, what do we do, how do we handle it, how do we change the law, and so I see a lot of these types of things. I mean, when Philando Castile got shot, Michael Scott got shot, those types of shootings, Tamir Rice, those types of shootings always bring up those emotions in me.
Michael Bell's son was shot and killed by a Kenosha police officer in 2004, and since then he has pushed for changes within the criminal justice system, changes that the Blake family may be able to benefit from going forward. So with that in mind, you started a campaign not long after the investigation that cleared the police officers that were involved in the killing of your son. What was your push for, and how did it start for you? I mean, because you're coming out of shock, you're coming out of tragedy, and then you start a 15-year campaign to change the state of Wisconsin?
I think the most alarming thing was that this very bad shooting by the Kenosha PD, the Wisconsin Professional Police Association decided to award these officers with meritorious service awards in May of 2005. And I'm thinking to myself, if I am I was a major in the United States Air Force at the time, if I am a major and I'm white and I have a blonde-haired boy killed under a spotlight, and these guys are awarding these officers for a bad shoot, and I've reached out to the governor, it was Doyle at the time, I've reached out to the attorney general, who was Lautenschlager at the time, And I've tried everything I can here to get a fair review, and I'm not doing it. And they're awarding these.
Sounds like you cracked.
I did, and you know what I did? I took a full page ad out in Chicago Sun Times, and I took a full page ad out in the New York Times, and I took a full page ad out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and a number of state papers, raising awareness of what the heck was going on here in Wisconsin. And so we had a civil rights lawsuit. It was settled with a record settlement on Michael's birthday in 2010. And I refused to accept a non-disclosure or confidentiality agreement because I wanted Michael's story to be told. And the city just wanted this to go away. And so the mayor of the city caved in and gave us the settlement without the non-disclosure. And then I started taking out billboards and advertising and TV commercials showing everybody what was going on in Kenosha.
Did you get any residuals from three billboards in Ebbing, Minnesota?
The motion picture?
No, I didn't. You know, it was...
It sounds somewhat similar. And
very similar, yeah. Because one of the ways I avoided litigation was to ask ours was questions. And,
yep.
And our question is, when police kill, should they investigate themselves?
You can still remember some of those signs on I-94. Now, the Jacob Blake shooting will be investigated by the State Department of Justice, not the Kenosha Police Department, as was done in your son's case. This is due to the passing of a law in 2014. The first of its kind happened here in Wisconsin, and you had a hand in changing that, Michael. So how will this be different for the Blake family than it was for yours?
The Blake family has the benefit of having an outside agency come in and conduct the investigation. But there's still work that needs to be done, Lee. Right now, after this investigation is complete, they're going to hand it back to the local district attorney. And if you go to our Plea for a Change Facebook page, I'll show you with a video that was just released today where the district attorney colluded with the chief of police and the sheriff on how to block the Michael Bell investigation. So essentially, you're taking an independent investigation and you're handing it back to one of the team members of local law enforcement. In the state of New York and the state of New Jersey, they've worked very hard to make sure that independent outside prosecutors are involved with police-involved shootings, and that's what needs to occur here in Kenosha. And until that does, I'm going to question the process.
Well, and part of the reason that these investigations were taken away from the local DAs is the local DAs rely on the local law enforcement to make their cases in criminal courts every day. So it would be difficult to ask that same relationship to become contentious when they have to work together on a daily basis in the courts and through the criminal justice system.
We had to bring in an open records attorney, and you were absolutely right. We had to bring in an open records attorney, and I had to spend over $40,000 in open records fees, and we discovered that the chief of police, the sheriff, and the DA Michael Gravey, and Sheriff Beth and Dan Muskinis were on a first-name basis, and they were texting messages back and forth. And if you go to the video that we put up on our Facebook page, Plea for a Change, you will see that they were texting back and forth on how to come together to block an investigation in the Michael Bell shooting.
Because they're a team, and that we wouldn't expect that to, I mean, that's the way our criminal justice system is set up. Michael Bell is our guest, and he's the Wisconsin father that sought justice in the death of his son, who died at the hands of Kenosha police back in 2004. Be interested to know what you think in the changes made with the investigation now in the hands of the Justice Department, but then return back to the local DA. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. You can always email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our conversation with Michael Bell continues. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. The police shooting of Jacob Blake is being investigated by the Wisconsin Department of Justice. It wasn't that long ago that if an officer fired a gun, their own department could conduct their own investigation. In 2014, Wisconsin became the first state to end that process, and our guest helped lead a decade-long fight for this one element of accountability. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn. However, the investigation, according to our guest, could be returned to the local DA. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. Michael Bell is the father of 21-year-old Michael Bell Jr., who was shot and killed by an officer in Kenosha in 2004. And since then, he's been working to make a difference. Michael, you talk about the shooting of Jacob Blake being just blocks from your family's home. And since that shooting, we have seen protests break out in the streets across Kenosha. What's your reaction to them?
First off, is I think the peaceful protest is very important. I'm very alarmed by the civil unrest and the looting and the burning and so forth. I was downtown in the Lincoln Park area on the morning that they were putting out the fires, and And you have to commend our fire department. They had four huge trucks just pouring water on a whole block of buildings that were being burned down. I was totally appalled by it.
I imagine in 2005, you probably wanted to burn some things down yourself. How did you channel all that anger and rage?
It is something, but there's some part of inside of me that just wanted to be to do it by the book. And I think we've done it by the book, and I'm happy about that. But there are times to know that I do have some anger over it, and the reason being is that I understand now what people of color are experiencing. Before that, I labeled myself as an ignorant white professional. I sat in my home. I didn't want to hear some of the evening news. When I did see it, I typically tended to believe the people in uniform because I was somebody that wore a uniform. And so I can understand their anger now.
How does a community in Kenosha channel that anger? How do communities across the country channel that anger in a way that provokes a difference, that incites a change, so that the next police shooting doesn't have to be a police shooting at all, so that the next allegations of violence are mitigated to a degree that they just become, you know, a nice friendly debate? How do we make it better?
We can make it better, and I want everybody to understand that I respect law enforcement, and I just expect the truth even more. My son's case was a cover-up. Instead of coming out and saying that it was an honest mistake where a police officer hooked his gun on a car mirror, they fabricated a story, they blamed the person that was killed, and they tried to avoid litigation and ruining their reputation. Right now, Senator Van Wongard, a retired police officer, the majority caucus leader from Racine, has worked with our group for the last 4 years to put out a new piece of legislation that I think is critical to how law enforcement moves forward in our nation. And this is an NTSB-style review of law enforcement. And what it does is it takes a look at the root causes of really what occurred in a police shooting, and then issues safety recommendations like the NTSB would to avoid it from happening again. If you take a look at the NTSB track record, you can see that they brought down aviation mishaps from the 1950s to today. They're almost non-existing, considering all the departures that we have from runways around our nation.
Michael, we talked with State Senator Wongard yesterday about his proposals, and following that, the State Senate was gaveled into session, and it just sits there dormant right now. And as you mentioned, the state senator is one of the most powerful Republicans in a Republican-controlled legislative body. What's preventing this legislation from moving forward? Why isn't there? We've got the opportunity now, and there seems to be a call for something to change. Have you talked to the state senator recently? Why isn't this part of the session that was gaveled open yesterday?
I talked with his chief of staff yesterday. And we're excited about moving this legislation forward. And you have to remember that this legislation has been crafted by both sides. I can assure you right now that Governor Evers has two senior advisors in his staff that have been associated with the development of this particular piece of legislation regarding the NTSB. I am going to say this. Shame on the legislator and the legislative bodies right now, because this is nothing more than a power struggle between the two. And they need to come together for the greater good of the whole.
You've got a bill that's got bipartisan support. It has, including the governor's, members of the governor's staff. You've got one of the most powerful Republicans in the state Senate spearheading this. And you've got the state Senate currently in session. This could happen. And
it could happen, and it should happen. But then again, we want to do it right. We want to make sure that it's done right, and it needs to be. Needs to have a public hearing, and people like myself need to come and talk, and our positions need to be put in the media so that way everybody can get a clear picture of it. But this bill, just like in aviation, will help reduce police-related fatalities on both the law enforcement side and the community side. It takes out the finding fault, and it looks at what was the root cause. And so this is so important. I've been fighting for it for 4 years.
Yeah, and the opportunity seems to be available at the moment. Michael Bell, if this legislation existed at the time of your son's shooting, what do you think would have been different?
I often wondered that. There have been cases where police have made a use of force error or mistake of fact. I mean, take a look at Amadou Diallo in New York. Officers thought he was reaching for a gun and was only reaching for his wallet to show him his ID. If that would have occurred in my son's case, where the officer came forward, and you do know that the officer involved in my son's case committed suicide in 2010, but if it would have came forward and told the truth, we wouldn't be here fighting today to make a difference in Wisconsin. Our last piece of legislation, at my last count, has gone over into 8 other states already. So somehow or another, our tragedy is making it better for others.
Last fall, you called for a new investigation to be done regarding your son's shooting. What action do you want to see taken on this case still?
I can assure your listeners that this is not a cold case. I did an interview on MSNBC the other night, and he said, well, you know, it was 16 years ago. It's water on a bridge. No, it's not. I have two of the leading authorities in forensics in our nation, one with audio and one with ballistics, reviewing our case now. And we're going to be bringing additional information forward to show that the officers, we already showed that they lied, but now we're going to have the hardest of evidence to show that they can't dispute that the officers had lied and Michael Bell was executed.
What can the Blake family expect going forward, considering your experiences?
I'm feeling for him. I mean, I remember what that time was like for us. We were trying to make funeral arrangements for Michael. We were just so emotionally devastated. And right now, I have to commend them. And I look forward to meeting Jacob's father. I want to stand side by side with Jacob's father. I want to hold a picture of my son, and I want him to hold a picture of his son. And I want to show the nation that we can come together as fathers and fighting for our children.
Fighting for our children. Michael Bell, as you continue to fight for children across the country, and your support for law enforcement is clear, but also at the same time, your call for oversight. We're going to be spending the next hour talking about government oversight, and you talk about the potential for a NTSB-style commission. If we were where you wanted us to be, what would law enforcement look like on the streets today? And specifically, I'd like you to talk about communities of color.
I think if we brought trust back into the system, and that is the evaluation of the use of force, nobody wants to take away the power an officer needs. I mean, just take a look at the shooting at the Sikh temple in Oak Creek. Lieutenant Brian Murphy took 14 bullets defending people of color. Nobody wants to take that away. But we want to reduce these mistake of fact shootings. 30% of law enforcement shootings have been recorded to be approximately a mistake of fact shooting. So first thing I would want to see is this. Make sure that law enforcement, when an officer uses deadly force, make sure that an officer was in a clear frame of mind. Let's make sure he wasn't under the influence of alcohol, painkillers, or steroids. Second thing, let's have an independent investigation. And right now we've conducted that, and that was a very hard thing to do, but I want to tell everybody that law enforcement worked with us on that.
Michael, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for yours this morning. I very much appreciate your perspective.
Thank you very much for having me on your show, Lee. I'm sorry I ran out of time, and I look forward to talking to you again.
I as well, Michael Bell. Just ahead, we look at the history of government accountability and public trust. Bring trust back, says Michael Bell, and what kind of a difference would that make for you and me? I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network.